From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We're all familiar with the horror stories about parents who hurt their kids. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, more than 250,000 children were removed from their homes and placed in foster care in 2013. But most were not, as you might imagine from the stories that make the news, removed because of abuse. In most cases, 79%, the reason was neglect. And many parents do get their kids back. But how does that actually work? A new PBS documentary sets out to answer that question. As you might imagine, it shows that navigating the child welfare system is not for the faint of heart. Here from Tough Love, New York child welfare officials meet with Hannah Sadiq, who has two children in foster care, to talk about her new baby.
We need to know, are you capable of caring for your three children at this time? Because this is a part of what happened with you in the past, your abandonment of leaving your children for long days, your mother becoming overwhelmed that she couldn't care for your children anymore.
But that's not what it's like now. I've got Philly and we take care of the kids together.
This hour, On Point, a look at the foster care system from the perspective of parents who lost their children. You can join us on air or online. We'd love to hear from you if you have a personal experience with foster care, especially if you've had your children placed in foster care. Were you able to get them back, and what was that like? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining us now from New York is director and producer Stephanie Wong Breal. Her new documentary is Tough Love, which premieres tonight on PBS. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for having me.
A lot of people, I think, will recognize your work from a previously well-received documentary that you produced about a family who adopted a child from China. So how did you get interested in this story about parents who'd lost their children to the foster care system?
So it was actually Well, I Need Mommy, my last film, which you just mentioned, that drew me to our nation's foster care and adoption system. Many audiences, when they saw Why Any Mommy, urged me to look more closely at our domestic foster care and adoption system. And they told me that it's very challenging to adopt domestically, and I didn't understand why or what they were talking about. And when I learned at the time, this was back in 2010, that there are over 400,000 children in foster care in the United States, my first immediate thought was, Why are so many parents going abroad to adopt when there are so many kids here in America who need a home? And that was my thinking starting this project. And then only once after I started interviewing social workers and foster parents, did I learn that there were actually a lot of parents who were trying to get their kids home. And I didn't know that. I had no idea that, you know, there were kids in foster care who had birth parents who wanted to bring their families back together.
So your first instinct was really the foster care parent side of it, and then you got interested in the birth parent side of the story. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
How did that happen, or what is it that sparked your attention?
Well, honestly, I was lucky enough to talk to a lot of foster parents, and during those conversations, many of them said to me, I'm not comfortable with you talking to the birth parents of their foster child. And I said, that's totally fine. I totally respect that, but I can't make a film about this without including all perspectives.
But how come they didn't want you to talk to the birth parents?
Because I think that the relationship is very fractious. It was very challenging. Just by the way that it's built up, it's about a child and, you know, one family from one culture is taking care of a child. And because another family wasn't doing maybe the right thing.
So how did you come up with, how did you find the parents that you ultimately followed in the film? You followed two parents, Patrick Brown in Seattle and Hannah Sadiq, and that's the lady we just heard in that short clip that we just played in New York. How did you find them?
So I knew from the onset that getting parents involved in this storytelling process was going to be extremely challenging because, you know, they're going through so much and their voice and is rarely heard, and the challenges that they're facing are quite huge. So what I did was after learning about different organizations that are helping parents try to navigate the child welfare system, I found out about the Child Welfare Organizing Projects, parent support group meetings in East Harlem, New York. And I started to sit in and observe these meetings that took place once a week, every Wednesday. And parents from all five boroughs of New York City would come, Spanish-speaking, Chinese-speaking, and they would all be seeking advice on how to navigate the system and how to get their kids home on a faster timeline, or seeking advice about their lawyers or whether or not it was okay for their social worker to be doing this. And the program, the group, was run by parent advocates. And these are parents who have been through the system themselves, either reunified or did not reunify with their children, but then went on and got training to become parents to help guide other parents through the system.
So let's hear about Patrick first. As I mentioned, there are two families that you followed closely through the course of the film. Let's hear about Patrick. He has a daughter, Natalia, and he described the events that led him to losing her to the foster care system. He and Natalia's mother were both using drugs. He had to go to jail, and then he called Child Protective Services. Do I have that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Let me just play a short clip, and then you can tell me a little bit more about him. Here it is.
20 days later, I got out of jail, and at that point, she was in the system. The whole process was so extremely hard on me, seeing her 2 hours a week, 4 hours a week. I had a relapse after 4 years of sobriety.
Is that typical, Stephanie, of what you learned in the course of reporting this film, that kind of experience? That he's the one who actually triggered the events but he called.
No, actually, what's so unique about what we ended up capturing in this film is two parents who did seek help. Hannah called the police on her ex, and Patrick called CPS on his girlfriend. They were both asking the state for help, and in the end, they both had their children taken away from them for over 2 years' time. So no, that is not usually the case. Usually someone else is calling ACS on you or CPS on you. So that is quite interesting that we ended up showcasing two parents who reached out for help on their own.
The title of the film comes from this case. Why is that? That tough love comes from a phrase that's uttered in the course of your following Patrick's story. So who was giving the tough love? And tell us why you titled the film that. Mm-hmm.
So I kept hearing that word tough love being thrown around in the Seattle's family treatment court. We chose to use that title in the end because we felt like there was a lot of tough love being thrown around in that courtroom. We didn't get to see that kind of tough love at all in the New York system. We felt like it was just much more challenging to any kind of love coming from New York. So we thought that that was an apt way to show, you know, both from the perspective of the system and both from the perspective of the parent of, you know, what kind of, you know, issues that they're facing, that they're getting some tough love from everyone else around them.
Well, we are actually going to hear from one of the judges in the case a little later in this program, Patricia Clark, and also Julia Garrett, who took over the case at one point when Patricia Clark had to take a leave or retired. I'm not quite sure which, and she can clarify that for us. But they were what? They were the people who were making sure that he did what? That he oversaw, that he met certain benchmarks as a condition for getting his daughter back or reuniting with his daughter. Is that their role in it?
Yeah, so Judge Clark's role and Judge Garrett's role is to get a report from the team from Family Treatment Court and then just make sure that the parents are on track to, you know, doing everything they need to be doing and meeting all the court requirements to get their child home, safely returned home.
Okay, let me play another short clip, if we would, from the film. And this is on one of Patrick's regular meetings in family court where he's reporting on, in this instance, another boo-boo, shall we say. He had and I think that other people might disagree with that he deserved to have his daughter with him, even though he had a gambling episode over the 4th of July weekend, that the year that you were filming. And this is from the documentary, Tough Love. Here it is.
I've made some huge mistakes. I think that's why we want to know what do you want.
Nobody's more devastated than I am.
But you understand this is a voluntary program. You're not required to be in family treatment court. You can still
work for... Is that the love I get? I'm here to save my life with my child, and this is the... Yeah. Okay.
Well, first of all, Stephanie, kudos to Patrick for being really open about his stuff, right? And being, because I think you gave people the option of withdrawing from the project. And at this point, he could have said, I don't want the cameras to see this anymore. But he didn't. He let you stick with him throughout the project. But I'm sure that people are going to see this and they're going to say, you know, you're sympathetic to a person who's trying hard, but what about the child? And what do you say to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And kudos to Patrick and Hannah for letting cameras document this part of their life, this very challenging period of their lives, and letting the cameras in to see what they were going through. And audiences will definitely have questions towards Patrick and whether or not he can do this and whether or not he has his daughter's best interest in mind during this scene. And I hope they do. You know, when you're making a movie about this kind of subject matter, there are a lot of ups and downs because the reality is that's the truth of their lives. I mean, you know, watching Hannah and Patrick go through everything, there were ups and downs. And sometimes the times were good and sometimes the times are bad. And that's the same for my life. I'm just not going through the child welfare system while all those things are going on.
This is On Point. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the new documentary, Tough Love, about the difficulties and the path for parents trying to regain custody of children in foster care. We're talking now with Stephanie Wong Brayal, director of the documentary, Tough Love, which premieres tonight on PBS, and you'll want to check your local listings for the exact times. We're getting a number of people calling with experience with the system, and right now I want to hear from Noel, who's calling from Stratford, Connecticut. Noel, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Michelle.
What are your thoughts about this? I understand that you're a social worker and you work with very young children from birth to age three?
Three,
yeah.
Yes. I work in the birth to three system for the state of Connecticut and have frequent opportunity to work with families in the foster care system, both the parents trying to reunify with their children, the children and the foster families. And my overall hope, wish, dream is that someone would focus on the critical period of development for these young, young children and put some system in place that can provide stability. The biggest, I would probably guess that Patrick and the subjects in this film may have also been part of unstable families maybe growing up, and the cycle just keeps repeating itself.
All right. Well, let's hear from, thank you, Noel, for calling. And so let's bring Hannah in, and maybe she can answer that question for us. Hannah Sadiq is featured in Stephanie's documentary. Her two older children were taken from her and placed into foster care. She is now married, and she has a three-year-old daughter, Mia, who lives with her and her husband at home. And Hannah works as a waitress and a host and a cashier. Hannah, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
And Stephanie is remaining with us. So, Hannah, can you tell us, why did you decide or agree to participate in this film? It can't have been easy. It can't have been an easy decision, putting your business out there like that.
I mean, to be honest, in the beginning, I really didn't have any expectations, or I didn't know what was going on or how far this story was going to go. I just know I wanted to be heard, and I was just angry and to the point there, you know, where I just needed to be heard. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's how it kind of like came about.
How did it happen that your children went into foster care?
Well, me and their father were going through a lot, and I guess the separation and the way it happened, and his family being involved also. It was just a lot of people involved and a lot of stuff thrown in the air.
Well, the previous caller asked, and again, I have to thank you for being willing to talk about this, because I know it can't be easy. I mean, I'm sure if I walked downstairs right now and stopped five people on the street and said, you know, tell me all your business about how you're raising your kids and things of that sort,
yeah,
they would all, you know, none of them would be pleased. So thank you for this. But how would you describe the process to this point?
It's a little overwhelming scary. But I'm also looking at it in a brighter point, you know, like future wise, and a lot of positive things are happening, you know. And it's what makes me continue the story is like I see how far I've came and how hard it was for me, and I could just imagine how many young adults or even older parents that are must be going through this, and they have no guidance. And that's where I came from. I really didn't have the right guidance. So anything and everything that I can do to help or maybe, you know, open a lot of eyes, then yeah, I'm down for the cause, you know.
What was the biggest surprise for you about your experience with the foster care system? Is it the fact that you called because, as I understand it from the film, and you can correct this if this is not right, is that your former, the baby's dad was right. abusive, as you understood it, right? That he was physically abusive to you and that you called, and as a result of that, the children were taken from both of you. But then, is that what happened?
So. Well, it was something like that. But like I said, other people were involved, his family also. And we were young. I mean, I was ridiculously young. I really didn't know what was going on. And I didn't, like I said, didn't have the right guidance. So at that moment, everything was just happening too crazy. Because I wasn't educated, therefore, you know, all this stuff occurred. And I just didn't have a voice at the moment. Sorry.
It's hard. You didn't feel... Take a minute. I know it's hard.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You couldn't describe what was... Well, let me just play. How about this? Why don't I play a short clip from the film? And there's a film where an advocate from the Child Welfare Organizing Project is trying to help you prepare for a meeting with somebody from the New York City Administration for Children's Services. And the advocate is a woman named Sabra Jackson. And you had a new baby coming at the time then the filming started, Mia. And Sabra was trying to prepare you for what might happen. And this is from the documentary, and here it is.
They are going to try to bring up some of the inconsistencies from the past in order for them possibly to retain. I don't think that they can, but they are going to try to. For us, we want to move forward. Chief Mom is doing what she needs to do, but they are going to try to bring up. So be prepared for that.
So that was that. And so what was the issue here? And maybe, Stephanie, you can help out here, is that the issue was not just that the children from the previous relationship were going to remain in foster care and you were trying to get them back. But then the issue was also that your new baby, there was a chance that your new baby would also be put under supervision as a result. Is that
correct? Actually, she was put under supervision for a few months after I gave birth to her. So,
and they were trying to understand in this meeting, you know, they were trying to just prepare, you know, what she should say or making sure that they had all their ducks in a row. And the parent advocate, Sabra, was getting them ready for that. But then she brought up this idea that, you know what, they're not going to let go of what happened, even though you are working so hard to making strides into your future and getting over those past mistakes, they will not let you let that go so easily. And because of that, they are probably going to make it harder for you to take your child home without another petition being filed.
Hannah, can I just ask you this? And I know this is not easy for you, but can you see their point?
Yes.
If you had a situation where the children were taken from you, because in this instance, and you're honest about this in the film, there are times when you were overwhelmed and you left the kids with your mother for long periods of time and your mother didn't feel she could cope. Can you understand their concern about bringing another child into the family?
Yes, I can understand completely. And wow, that was definitely a reality check, and not more than I need to hear, but like I knew these facts, you know what I mean?
Right.
And there was moments where I was very discouraged, or I don't know which way to turn all over again, you know, because I'm like, I'm trying to move forward. I'm about to have another baby. I'm trying to make all the right decisions. But it's like now I'm having all these, not setbacks, but people's opinion, people's, you know, how they feel or what they think, or, you know, always pointing fingers like this is not the proper way or whatever the case may be, it's just overwhelming after a while, you know, especially being pregnant and about to give birth and your hormones is raging all over the place. So yeah, definitely. I felt like I had a huge rock on my shoulder. And like I said, of course, I understand their concern, and I was very appreciative, and, you know, I needed that.
But at the same time, what bothered me most during that was the fact that, you know, she was in this new relationship with this new husband, Philly, who's an amazing husband and support to Hannah. And he has nothing to do with ACS. He's never had a case with ACS. So she was trying to build new building blocks for her life and for her family.
Did you feel, Stephanie, that her deficits were all on display, but none of her positives? That the bad marks were very visible, but the good marks were downplayed? Was that your assessment from what you saw?
Absolutely. That's very well put.
Let me bring in another caller, though. And Hannah, again, we have to appreciate you for being willing to get this perspective. But one of the points that you made, Stephanie, in our first conversation was that, foster parents often have a very different perspective. And I want to bring in Cindy, who's calling from Bloomington, Illinois. Cindy, what are your thoughts?
Hi, Michelle. First, I want to thank you for addressing this topic. I think I have emailed NPR probably 100 times asking them to talk about foster care. What we're doing currently isn't working. 80% of inmates in prison have been in the foster care system. So in my opinion, as a foster parent, reunification is not working. Because most of these kids either end up back in foster care or they end up incarcerated because they're still not being cared for properly. Hmm. My experience is that I had a newborn from the time she was born. I picked her up from the hospital. When she was 2 years old, she was returned to her biological mom, who had 7 kids who were already removed. And she did not get any of those other 7 kids back. And I just feel like kids are not worth a gamble. I understand that some biological parents can get it together. For the most part, they don't, though. And I don't think we should be gambling with kids' lives on whether or not their biological parents can make a go of it.
Well, thanks for calling, Cindy. And I do have to say, we're getting a number of calls along the same vein. A number of people are saying there really should be a time limit. There really should be a time limit on how long parents have to get themselves sorted out, particularly with younger children. It's just very that instability is just very impermanence is just very damaging to them. I don't know. Hannah, do you have an opinion about that?
Well, thank you, Cindy. And as far as my opinion goes, I believe that everybody's situation is completely different. And I believe everybody doesn't have the right tools or the right guidance, or just life itself is very difficult. And nobody has a handbook written down to them how to be a parent. But, you know, you have to give credit to the parents that are trying, that's been there. I feel terrible about, you know, what her foster child had to go through. And as far as the mother goes and having all those children, it's very difficult to hear stories like that, because as far as me, I mean, I went through so much, even with my kid's father, and I'm not going to badmouth him because he is a good parent. I'm very proud of how he's raised them. And regardless of all the obstacles, we try to come together and be good parents by the end of the day. You know what I mean?
I do.
But my thing is like, don't take those credits away from parents that are actually trying. You understand? Now,
right.
It's true. Some of the system is kind of, I'm trying to use the right word. It's kind of messed up.
Okay.
And because of the system being so messed up and so corruptive, it's like, damn, how many different directions can you go? And for the parents that aren't trying, those are usually the ones that are real quick to pick up and have their kids. But the ones that are trying are the ones that are being dragged through the mud and going through all these obstacles.
But let me bring in Patricia Clark. She's joining us from Seattle, Washington. She was a judge in King County Superior Court of Washington, elected to the court in 1998, and she retired in 2013. She presided over Patrick Brown's case before her retirement in 2013. Of course, this is in Seattle. Hannah, can you stand by and stay with us, and also you, Stephanie, but while we bring Judge Clark in. Judge, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
From what you've heard so far, where do you come out on this? I mean, a number of the callers are saying that there really needs to be a timeline. It's just not fair to the kids. And you're hearing a parent like Hannah say, but if you are trying, should give her some slack. What do you see?
All right. And let me just say that this is a very complex issue. The first thing that needs to be clear is that there is a timeline. The federal statutes require that within, I think it's 15 months of removal from home, there needs to be something called a termination petition filed so that the kids are moving toward permanence. But let me also say that simply because the parental rights are terminated does not necessarily guarantee that that child is going to be moved into a permanent, long-term family situation. We have many, many kids who are still in foster care years after their parental rights have been terminated. So let me just back up a bit. One of the things that was said by one of your callers is that 80% of the inmates who are in the correction system have had a foster care experience, but there is no indication that they ever return to their families. We know that if you can go back home and home can be made safe, the best place to raise a child is at home.
So let's talk about that in a minute. Let's hold that thought a minute about the experience that some kids have in foster care, because there are a number of people emailing us about that. And I'd like to focus on that in a minute. But I do want to focus again about this question that was before us, which is how many chances should somebody get, or how many times can they mess up? And I want to play another clip from the film. And this is where Patrick, who was the person who appeared before you, he's explaining about why he messed up. And he ended up gambling at a casino on the 4th of July. And apparently he gambled away his rent money. I just want to play that clip. And here it is.
4th of July, I woke up and should have been with my daughter, but she was in Arizona for a week. And I just was too emotionally. It was a lot for me. And it wasn't my drug of choice, but I went to the casino because that's where it sounds weird to even try to explain it. You know, that's what I did because I was lost without her because she's somewhere else with a family that isn't me and her. And that was a lot emotionally for me.
How about that, Judge? How do you weigh something like that? I mean, on the one hand, you've got the child's safety to consider and not just safety, but well-being, because really what we're talking about here is not safety, it's well-being. On the other hand, a lot of people mess up. What's this? How many chances should somebody get?
Okay, so that you are dealing within the framework of the statute, so you have so many months in which to correct your deficits and deficiencies before we are forced to move to terminate your parental rights. However, we now all understand that relapse is a part of recovery and that people go through those cycles. And if you listen to Patrick in that portion of the film, the good thing about what happened to him is that he could come forward and say, this is what I did. This is what happened. This is why it happened. And you're going to hear the judge say that's not a good excuse, and that's how we get to that tough love discussion. But he has made tremendous strides in simply being able to say, mea culpa. Here's what I've done. Now how do I move forward? And we need to be able to help those families do that. I've had young people come before me, and they've been in the foster care system for years. 15 and 16-year-olds by then, and running away constantly. And when you ask them where they are going when they run away, they will tell you they're going home.
All right.
So we need to find a way to provide that kind of stability for our children and yet give those biological parents the opportunity to get their kids back if possible.
Judge, I hope you'll stay with us. We want to talk more about these important and complicated issues. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
This is On Point. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the foster care system from the perspective of parents who are hoping to reunite with their children. That's the subject of a new documentary premiering on PBS tonight. It's called Tough Love, and you want to check your local listings for the exact times. We're talking with Stephanie Wong Brayal, director of the new documentary Tough Love, with Hannah Sadiq. She's a mother featured in the film whose two older children were placed in foster care, and Patricia Clark, judge in King County Superior Court until her retirement in 2013. She's also featured in the documentary. She supervised one of the parents who's featured in the documentary as well. Judge, can I play a short clip here and all of our guests, and thank you all for staying with us. Another clip from the documentary. This is Alana Seco. She's Patrick Brown's court-appointed lawyer. And we were talking before the break about some of Patrick's slip-ups. And he was talking about, you know, why he slipped up. And at one point, the judge who also took over the case after you'd had to take a short leave let Patrick know that he was on slippery ground there, that there was a chance that he was going to lose custody of his child. And this is what his court-appointed lawyer had to say.
I have a hard time with this case. It seems to me that for some reason, Patrick's being held to a standard that other parents are not being held to. And yes, he gets stressed about money and scheduling, but he has a bond with his daughter. He hasn't shown any safety problems. And I'm not sure what all of this meddling into what he's doing with his money or how he manages his money or his inability to make enough money, how that is related to his ability to parent
specifically. Well, he went from one addiction to another.
Well, that was Judge Garrett speaking there. But what about that, Judge Clark? Do you think that we hold these parents to a standard that we, some of us, might not be able to meet ourselves?
Yes. And what we know, or what I have observed as we go through this system, is the system have a tendency to bring the parents in for one or more deficits. And I'm now talking about parents who have substance abuse or neglect issues. I'm not talking about physical abuse. So those parents come into the system with some identified deficiencies that we are attempting to correct or help them correct. But once they're in the system, we have this tendency to keep moving the goalpost and keep going further and further into areas that we think could be corrected. So I like to say we bring them in because they had a Simpson moment, and we keep them trying to make them into Donna Reed families, which is unfortunate. None of us can live up to that level of scrutiny if we were faced with the same situation. So it's a problem that's inherent in our system that needs to be addressed so that parents can have some realistic expectation of getting their kids back.
On the other hand, we have the perspective from some of the people calling us now who say that something's not right, but that, you know, somebody's got to raise these kids and somebody's got to kind of give them the stability that they need. So let's hear from Daryl, who's calling from Syracuse, New York. Daryl?
Yes. Hi, Michelle. Thank you for accepting my call. In response to something the judge just said, I totally disagree with that. I think the minimal level of care in our system is too low. And the result of this is that it's affecting these children. I think the we spend too much time on thinking that there should be reunification when really the table should be turned. It should be the children who should have the best thing done for them. And I think we worry too much about the family and getting the original family back together. And that's not what's best for the children all the time.
Okay.
And I think our system focuses too much on that.
Dale, thanks for calling. How about Terry from Buffalo, New York? Terry, do you want to add your thoughts to this?
Yes, I do, and I'm on the side of the child. I understand that in some cases, reunification just is not possible. But then I think that as a foster parent, that we think these kids are going to be so grateful that they were saved. And then they don't understand what they've been saved from, because they love their parents. these children are dealing with separation issues, and then they become depressed and unhappy because they don't really understand why they can't be with their parents and why they can't come back. And so now you're creating a whole nother environment. You got teenagers that have been in foster care that haven't really connected with the foster caregivers because they become enemies, okay? It's your fault that I'm not with my mom. All right, so now you got this kid just totally separating from you, turning against you. Now you're taking the kid to court and treating him just like his parent because he's getting in the same trouble, having the same issues that drove his parent to what they're doing. Now you've created another cycle with that parent's child.
Mm. Well, Terry,
all right, if we're about the kids, then what do we do about that?
All right, that's a good question. So, Terry, so thanks so much for your call. Judge Clark, can you, you know, Stephanie, the filmmaker, Stephanie Wong Brielle, at the very beginning of our conversation, talked about what she saw at the very beginning, which is sometimes this tension between foster parents and birth parents. Let's just acknowledge that being a foster parent's a hard job. I mean, if it's like, love this child, but don't love him or her so much, right, that you don't want to relinquish and turn the child back to the birth parents if that is what the court decides. So that seems to be a hard place to be anyway. But what about the argument that a number of these callers are making, Judge Clark? I mean, some people feel that there's so much emphasis on unification. From your experience, reunifying kids with their birth parents, from your experience, should that still be the goal? Mm-hmm.
What should be the goal is what is in the best interest of the child. And often that is reunification with their parents, especially when their parents' deficits can be rectified within that statutory time frame. Kids don't forget their parents. Kids long to go home. Kids need that stability. If, in fact, we can establish that home is safe and home is stable. And if not, then we need to make a decision sooner than later in attempting to get that child into another safe situation. But we literally do not have in this country enough long-term stable placements for all the children who are in care. So we have this tension. We have this idea out there somewhere that if we terminate these parents' rights, these kids are going to be then moved into an adopted home, that someone's going to adopt them. And that is not the case for most of the kids going through the system. So we need to have some real discussion about what's actually happening and then try to figure out how to create a system that's addressing the needs of the foster parents, the bio parents, and the children who are moving through it to the best possible outcomes.
We're starting to hear from listeners on this very point. From a listener on Facebook, Karen Sanchez tells us, she says, I was in foster care for 4 years at age 10, beginning in 1972. My mom had mental illness and father charged with neglect for leaving us with her when off on U.S. Navy assignment. I can tell you I still feel pain sometimes due to that separation of my family. I mourn the loss of that family bond. Only the youngest sibling was removed permanently and adopted. Kids rarely have a voice in the system. They need more options to be acknowledged in their loss as well. And we have a call from Michael, who's calling from Gowanda, New York. And Michael, you have an experience that you wanted to share with us?
Thank you so much, Michelle, for letting me speak. I was a foster child growing up in the 60s. I left my foster home, or my real home, when I was 3 and never went back. And I went through several foster homes. And I never, my story was my father was an alcoholic, my mother was mentally ill, so I never fortunately, I never really got to connect with them. I didn't really even see them. I saw my mother once or twice throughout my entire experience in the foster care system. But my biggest concern was that I was emotionally and sexually and physically abused by 2 out of 3 foster homes. And that was, you know, I just want people to know that, you know, that the children, or like the one woman said, are very important. We need to focus on the kids. And unfortunately, I'm sorry that, you know, to bring that up. I actually just published a book called Whispers from the Third Level on the subject. I kept it quiet for 47 years. Didn't tell a soul. And then I decided to write it and tell everybody about what happened with my experience. And it's helping people. But my problem was I didn't even know my second foster, I didn't even know I had a sister until she showed up. So there was no communication of with my siblings. There were six of us in the family, and my sister showed up in the third foster home. I didn't even know I had a sister. There were six of us, and we were spread out all over the place. The older two, I don't even think were in foster care, but it was just a terrible. One foster home was just beautiful. It was just beautiful, but the third foster home was a nightmare, and I lived there for 11 or 12 years, and you know, not only myself, but my sister and my other siblings in that home were terribly sexually and physically abused.
I'm sorry, Michael. I'm sorry that happened. Thank you for calling. I know it's not easy to talk about that, so thank you so much for sharing that with us. Well, I think that speaks to your point, Judge Clark, that this is not easy, and that even, you know, great placements aren't that, you know, finding a safe place for kids is not that easy. Stephanie, that was one of the things, though, in Patrick's case, is that he did have, there was a, it seemed like a great, safe, stable foster home for him and all for his daughter, Natalia, and also they seemed to have a good relationship. I mean, the parents seemed to be supportive of his desire to have his daughter back. You know, Stephanie, I wanted to ask you, the outcomes in Patrick's and Hannah's case to this point are very different. And one is tempted to notice race, that Patrick is white and Hannah is a person of color. And I wondered, did that play a role? Did geography play a role? And also gender. I mean, we often think that, you know, we assume, I think a lot of people think that, you know, moms have an advantage in the system because people assume that kids belong with their mom. But he was able to have his daughter back with her. And Hannah, yeah, at this point, has not been able to have her children back with her full time. What do you think accounts for the difference?
I definitely think that all of those things play a role. But I also think that the people sitting in front of you play a role. Who is your attorney? Who is your judge? You know, having Judge Clark sitting in front of Patrick, he had a rapport with her. Time and time again, parents who I interviewed for the film in the Seattle system told me that even when they messed up, they felt like Judge Clark believed in them and believed that they could get back on their feet. And that meant the world to them and their own self-confidence and their own embarrassment for being in this situation. And, you know, as you played in the clip, Patrick's lawyer, you know, she represented his voice and represented, you know, what is the bigger picture going on right now. And in Hannah's story, you know, she didn't have those kinds of people rooting for her or helping her understand what was going on and what the bigger picture is.
Let me play a short clip to that end, if you don't mind. This is from the documentary Tough Love, where you are again, Hannah, trying to get the kids back, and you're presenting again before the Children's Services and talking about the steps that you're taking, and this is what they say.
The kids are with their fraternal grandmother, and they do ask for mommy, but they're young, they really don't understand, and they're stable where they're at now. In the future, if you go to school and get some type of trade and get a house, and stable, it's feasible. But now, at the last court date, the children are being released to the dad.
Hannah, that had to have been hard.
You can't even imagine.
How is it now?
I mean, right now, it's a lot better. I'm older. I'm a little much wiser. I understand a lot more. So I guess that kind of helps out, you know, to go through my daily basis or whatever. But I'm in a lot better place right now. Before I didn't have the tools. But now I feel like, you know, I know a lot more. So things are a lot easier for me.
How so? Easier how?
As far as my kids go,
you still don't have them with you full time, which is, I know, your goal.
No, I do not. And that is definitely the goal every single day of my life. But I do see them. I work now, so it's a little difficult, but I see them on the weekends. Me and their father is getting along very well. You know, we're coming up to an understanding. Everything is a work in progress. That's basically what it is. As long as you apply yourself and you want to make it work, it will happen. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm just trying to make it happen.
Stephanie, I'm going to give you the final word here. After all that you've learned here, it seems to me that there were some surprises for you in the course of reporting this film. There are a number of surprises you reveal here. The fact that neglect, not abuse, is a preeminent issue for most kids being removed from the home. The fact that there seem to be so many variables. Is there any final thought you'd like to leave us with? And to the degree that you feel comfortable, is there something that you think would make a difference in making the outcomes more consistent, or at least making people feel that it's more fair?
I definitely think, as Judge Clark has mentioned earlier, this is a very complicated issue. And I think that a lot of people think that they know it well because they sit on one side of it. But there are many sides to this story. And, you know, the media, and I think that certain of a people of a certain class come to it with certain ideas. And I think that when we dig a little deeper and we, you know, just rub away a little bit farther on who are the families going through this, we get to see another picture of the different kinds of families going through the system, both from the foster perspective and from the birth parent and child perspective.
Stephanie Wong Braille is director of the documentary Tough Love. It premieres tonight on PBS. Stephanie, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks to you, Hannah Sadiq. You were featured in
thank
the documentary,
you,
and it wasn't easy. I know it wasn't easy for you to be here with us, so we thank you so much for that.
No. You guys made it very, very wonderful. Thank you for having me.
And Patricia Clark, judge in the King County Superior Court of Washington until her retirement in 2013. Judge, thank you so much for speaking with us. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having this show on this topic.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.